we can, as a primer, we can talk about what is the similarities between Buddhism and other religions, and what are the differences. That should be easy for these guys. We won't put you under pressure. Or did you see any similarities and differences?
I guess why I got involved specifically while I was interested was because of the dissimilarities, and that it's less of a religion.
Yes.
Yeah. I turned off to religion.
Yeah. You didn't grow up Catholic, did you?
I did.
Catholic. Were you Catholic? No, you're not Catholic type, and he's certainly not.
I was.
Were you?
Oh, Hungarian. Yeah, I was. It.
Hungarians, that's right.
I was Irish.
That was my mom.
I was the sole Protestant of the Catholic neighborhood.
Yeah, I went to St. Bridget's School.
Oh, okay.
So taught by the nuns. Now they don't have nuns anymore, I don't think. I always say this, but it's true that most people who become Buddhists are usually Catholic or Jewish. I have my own theories on why that is, but it's not Catholic. It's not. I think, of course, the biggest tremendous difference in Buddhism and all other religions is the lack of God. So I used to say, well, it's not really atheist, it's agnostic, or it's not atheist because, but it is atheist. It's atheist. Buddhism does not believe in the creator God, period, and that's atheism. But, on the other hand, if you want to wiggle out of it, you can say that Buddhism believes in gods, but they're all kind of idiots. You know, the Buddha's point of view, I always enjoy the Buddha when he's talking about gods, because he always makes jokes and pokes fun at them. And so it was always a point of delusion. He always equates God to deluded people. And then there's more wiggle room, because there's something called Samuti Deva. Deva is the, I don't know if you've ever heard that word. Deva is it's not a good translation, God, is it? But it includes gods, and it includes something that we would think of as gods, but it also includes something we would think of as angels, and it also includes something we think of as spirits or ghosts, or we talk about dimensions of these beings. And but then he said the samuti means conventional. So when Thai people hear about the king of Thailand is a god, and he is a samuti deva, a conventional god. And the Buddha talked about people who are very rich, very educated, refined, and in some way live a life getting what they want. Not necessarily good people. Those are gods. And I remember one sutta, the Lichabis, who were a tribe of people at the time of the Buddha, and in Kosala, they had quite a strong kingdom. And they were coming to visit the Buddha, and they were all dressed in gold. They had gold chariots, and the horses were in gold braid, and the guys had big gold bracelets and gold helmets and studded with gems. And they're coming in the sun, and the Buddha says, "Those of you who haven't seen gods, here they come." And that's always struck me, is how often he would, depending on who he's talking to, he would talk about gods as literal beings in other dimensions, but he's also talking about gods as people. So there's not much difference in Buddhism. So that's a big difference. No permanent self is a big difference in Buddhism. So in other words, no soul. No such thing as a soul. It doesn't mean that there's no self. It means it's not one that stops. It's always changing. It's not permanent. And so from lifetime to lifetime, you become other. Well, in one lifetime, people change throughout their lifetime. And at no one point can you say, this is me, this is what I, this is my essence, this is my soul. You hear that a lot on, in the stories of America or the stories of the West, where the soul is so important, and songs and poetry and books and this idea of soul, and it's often mean the essence of a person, not always literally soul, the divine soul, but often means essence. But in Buddhism, no, the Buddha took everything apart, body and mind, since nothing outside counts anyways as belonging to us. And whatever he found, he said, it was impermanent. It wasn't permanent. There was no, so there's no essence there that is never changing. And that argument goes on today, of course. And you get, I always like it when people say, well, you can't be moral if you don't believe in a soul or you don't believe in a God. And here we have, at one point in the world, most of the people on earth were Buddhists who were atheists. And some of the most moral people on earth, the Buddha probably being, if you had to held up the most moral person in the history of the world, it would be the Buddha. And I don't care who you held it up against. And not, we don't count God, because God was not moral as far as Buddhists are concerned, since he destroyed people and children and women and got revenge and all that. But even Jesus, who was an angry person, hitting the Pharisees with a whip and yelling at people, and then now he doesn't compare to the Buddha. So it's kind of odd. It's kind of odd that the because if you don't believe in God and the soul, you're immoral. There's no reason to be moral, and then they simply it's a crevasse of not understanding Buddhism. It's huge. So when we get new people, one of the things I always tell new people is that the concepts are so different from how we're brought up. And I was brought up the same as you were. And the concepts are so different that it really takes a long time to sort of start to look at the world in a way that is not our familiar, habitual way of looking at it. In other words, a Judeo-Christian view. And that view, the Buddhist view, is the most important thing to develop, because that view is what liberates you. That view is what makes you understand, why me? What's going on? Where have I been? Where am I going? Why are things the way they are? That it falls into, well, of course they're like that. Once you get the Buddhist view, then, well, how could they be otherwise? Instead of, I have faith everything's really good, and I have faith that, oh, these people died, or this person died because, for a reason. Does that always, everything happens for a reason. Everything happens from a cause in Buddhism, but that doesn't mean reason. Reason means planned, intelligent, come about. So if a kid is born with disabilities, very bad disabilities, and people will fall back on, well, it's God's, there's a reason for this. He's put a purpose on earth for, no, there's not. But in Buddhism, what they do say is there is a cause for that. And so the Buddha deals in a much more disentangle yourself, instead of making things anthropomorphic, instead of making things personal. You disentangle and you say, these happen because of. So we, as I always say, we never question gravity. This falls, it doesn't fall because of me. That's how it works. And if you are the wealthiest person in the world, or the highest IQ, or whatever, you still fall out of a tree. And that's how the Buddha looked at the world. There are things that just happen because there's a cause for it. And it's not out to get us. It's not intelligent. It's not planning. It is the laws of physics, for instance. But mind, going through this minefield. If you don't understand the mechanics of something, a person will walk through a minefield and just stomp along and say, I hope I don't get blown out. And give a little prayer and all that. Boom. Another person may say, well, I have a mind detector. you know, I'm going to go through this and be careful and understand the workings of these things, and a person will do better. คนไทยป่ะมาจากไหน
สากินา
สากินา
ต้องย้ายมาจากมอญชิ
งนี่ครับอ๋อใกล้สากินา
ใกล้ใกล้สุดแล้วค่ะวัดวัดใกล้สุดนะคะ
วัดนี้อ่ะใกล้สุดใกล้สุดมีที่ดีทรอยต์แต่ว่าพระพูดภาษาอังกฤษไม่แน่ใจพูดได้หรอพูดฮอลแลนด์ก็มีฮอลแลนด์ไกล
สามีค
่
ะสนใจแต่เขานั่งเนี่ยเขาคงไม่ดีค่ะ
You have cushions? There are cushions in the somewhere. And also you can use a chair perfectly fine because you might be sitting here for a while and you get So you're new and they're new so you guys can get your questions togetherSo it is a matter of Buddhist concepts are, and you'd think it would be not that difficult, but when I'm talking to someone, the non-Buddhist, for instance, who, let's say I go to a meeting and I meet Catholic priest or rabbi or whatever, and the really a strange, the conversation could be strange and that I know they're not understanding me.And I understand them because they grew up here, but they're not not thinking like I'm thinking.
I'm worried that they do.
Huh?
I'm worried they do, but they don't want to.
But they don't want to.
They don't want
to. You mean that it's, well, yeah, for a Christian, for instance, it's very dangerous, Buddhist thinking. But I mean, they don't have the idea of karma, for instance. They don't have the idea of no self.They don't have the idea of cause and effect because everything is determined. Everything is made and determined by intelligence. They don't have the idea of being free of that. To you know, like in Buddhism, the other big difference, of course, is the Buddha said you have to question. Faith is not a good thing in Buddhism. Faith won't get you anywhere.So I always like to say it's a hermetically sealed mind is when you cannot question outside of this or you go to hell. This is basically what all religions say. If you say, well, I don't believe in God, we go to hell. Oh, you grew up Catholic, so you had your pants scared off you too, right? I mean, in my day, they did a lot more than probably nowadays. And the nuns were very good at scaring you to death. But people will stay inside that because with...unquestioning faith, and that is their strength. But in Buddhism, it's a weakness. So, and in the real world, it is also a weakness in reality. In other words, we would have no scientists, we'd have no doctors, we'd have no advance of anything if for instance, the world is flat and do not question it, and that's what actually happened. And the earth is the center of the universe, and everything else goes around it, and that's, people were hung and burned at the stake and everything else for that.So faith is stifling. And in Buddhism we have something called conviction, which is, means if you experience something that is true over and over again, and it works, and it matches reality, then you are then conviction comes about, then okay, yes, I believe this. But it has to be based on experience. It has to be based on more than just, I believe it. And there's not much...scary in Buddhism, you know, it's not for frightening people. I think the Buddha took the path of more excite the desire and excitement of being free, being liberated, the mind liberated. That's the tack he took. And that the other thing is that we must own up to our own responsibilities. You do it, you make the bed, you lie in it. My mother used to say that. But what you do is what you get, and how you think, how you speak, how you act can make you either happy or unhappy, and not to blame outside things for that. So there are, these concepts of always tell people in Asia, in Thailand, for instance, there is no word for soul. There's no such word. There's no concept of it. And I always love it when the Mormon missionaries go to Thailand, and they're trying to preach, and they use the word vinyana in Pali, and vinyana in Thai, and it doesn't mean soul. It means consciousness. But they don't have a word, so they have to. And this must really confuse people. I mean, it must confuse the Thais anyway. So, language is a very important thing too. And I always tell people, when you're studying Buddhism, so in America you use the Sanskrit form, so dharma and karma. But in Pali, we use Dhamma Kamma, so basically the Pali form of it is a little different. But it matters sometimes because Dharma, and the Sanskrit form is also Hinduism. So if you look up on the internet Dharma, you might get a Hindu translation of what it means, or you might get a Buddhist translation of what it means. But there are some phrases in Buddhism, as I said, the concepts are so different. There are some words that you just have to learn. There's no English equivalent. And although we try to translate, we don't translate things like karma, right? But people never understand what karma is, and how what its position is in Buddhism. I think people often watch My Name is Earl, and that's how they kind of get, you know, what karma means. Or they smoke a lot, you know, karma dude, kind of, karma is just this kind of nebulous thing out there. So, or karma is fate. This is my karma, you know, what happened to me? Oh, it's just bad karma. None of which are Buddhist interpretations of karma. So, on the one hand, Buddhism is, anyone who's ready to study Buddhism has to, one, remember the concepts are not Western. And two, sometimes the words or the ideas that we learned about Buddhism are not quite right because they're not filled in yet. And three, one has to keep a very open mind about questions. And the faith is not a good thing in Buddhism. And I tell everybody that comes here, you know, whatever place you go, if no matter who's sitting or giving the talk, if you swallow whatever they say, you're not going to learn anything at all. So, everything that the Buddha said, he said it should be tested. It has to match reality. That's a big important thing. And it has to make you not closed-minded, but more open-minded. So in Buddhism, when you come to a wall of some kind, I don't know, you crash through it. You don't just say, okay, I don't know. At least for things that are blocking wisdom, the arising of wisdom. Some things we don't know because they're just simply not worth knowing. So the Buddha said, you know, there are lots of questions in the world that philosophers talk about, and religious figures especially, that have no answer, will never have an answer, and are just useless. Like the thing about how many angels on the head of a pin. Or the beginning of time, or the end of time, or how old is the earth, or absolutely useless things from a Buddhist point of view, because they don't advance the mind being wiser. They advance intelligence, but not wisdom. So, who has questions? Anybody have any questions about Buddhism? Doesn't matter what it is. You must have questions.
I don't even know where to... I don't know enough to have a question. I've tried to study it for not many years, for a few years. And I read a book written by one of the Thai monks around Chicago. And I got really... problem with one of the ideas or something about non-attachment, and I felt like, you know, how would you go to
Like if you said, I want to go to the Olympics and win a gold medal, and that, and like to me, you would be being attached to the gold medal. And I felt like it kind of stymied my growth in Buddhism, because if you practice non-attachment, like how could you like excel at anything? Because you're attaching. Like if I want to be a doctor, then I'd go, that's attachment. You know, I want to be a doctor. I couldn't really get around that point, and I, like, it's like you were just saying, thinking probably in Western terms, and maybe missed the whole idea of non-attachment.
Well, there's two words, perhaps, that are more than two words, but one is the Buddhist word tanha. Tanha means craving for something. And then there's upadana, upadan, or upatan in Thai, which means clinging to something. Now, attachment, how could you have a family without being attached? I mean, go through life as a robot?
That's what I looked at.
But that's not the meaning. The meaning is, in the end, yes, of course, but if you're very advanced, and if you're like a Buddha, of course, the Buddha had absolutely no attachment, but he had great compassion. He had desire, which is not craving, but another word, desire, meaning to want to do something. Attachment is more like addiction. In other words, if somebody has attachment, that makes them lie, kill, steal, cheat in order to get their goal, then it's wrong attachment. That is bad attachment. If they have an attachment which does not affect them, in other words, they're going to be perfectly moral. They're never going to lie, cheat, steal, or kill, or anything else for that. So someone who is, you could say someone has an attachment to heroin. Well, they end up in jail because they do things, they run out of money and they run out of sanity and they do things to end up in jail. But there's actually a talk by the Buddha called One Good Attachment. And he's talking about the attachment to the path, the attachment to being a good person, the attachment to honesty, the attachment to compassion, the attachment, all those things. So attachment, he may have been talking about craving, which is a form, craving is literally, the word means thirst, a thirst. And that means that people do not know how to modify, to qualify, to reduce craving, which drives us, in other words. And again, even though in Buddhism something may seem simple, it isn't that simple. So you take the mind with an attachment. So everybody in this room will have attachment of some kind. Everybody. Let's say I'm attached to the dog, temple dog. Fuzzy little dog that we have, right? Because I'm actually not attached to people. Yes, I'm attached to the dog. Much more attached to animals than I am to humans. But I would never kill, steal, lie, cheat for the dog, for the benefit of the dog.
And those are the main things.
Well, other things too. Things that are dishonest, immoral, self-serving, not to your benefit and not to the other person's benefit.
I mean, that's another point. Like, to be a doctor, you have to be almost self-serving in a lot of things. Like, you're studying, you're ranking class. What's the purpose of what?
What is the reason someone wants to be a doctor? What is the reason someone wants to win an Olympic medal? In other words, it is the intention of the person that's important. So if their intention, if their motivations are greed, hatred, or delusion based, then it's not going to be to their happiness. Even though it might be neutral. As far as somebody wants to win a gold medal, well, I mean, then they go hit somebody else on the knee and break their leg so they can't ice skate. You remember that happened. That's when it, you know. But the whole system is a system of value. What is valuable? Now, to me, being the greatest sports person in the world has no value. It's valuable to that person. So that person has to think of their intentions, what motivates them. And you'll find that each individual has different reasons for motivation. It might be family, it might be cultural, it might be upbringing, it might be a brain tumor. But what is the value of the goal? From a Buddhist point of view, it has to be to your benefit and the benefit of others. That's a skillful goal. If it's only to your benefit and not benefits anybody else, then that's very selfish. But it doesn't necessarily make it wrong. It just means that it's not a very noble goal, is it? To go to a contest all over America to win the best barbecue sauce. Well, most people think, you know, it's much better to get a gold medal in the Olympics. But it isn't. It isn't simply a point of view. What is the benefit and what are the drawbacks from a motivation? So attachment, you don't worry about attachments if they don't change you in a way that increases, to put it a different way, increases greed, hatred, and delusion. Then you worry about an attachment. If it doesn't, then you don't worry about it. What the good attachment that the Buddha is talking about?
No, I'm thinking of an example of the doctrine you can argue that it's going to be right about the Buddha or right intention.
There are, as he says, there are other things you have to take into consideration. You can't take just attachment on its own. So the Buddha would look at that and say, if someone said to him, are attachments bad? That he would say, I do not say that. I do not say all attachments are bad. He would qualify it. There isn't a black and white in Buddhism. And there is actually, once you understand the sort of holistic view of Buddhism, that makes sense. Because the Dhamma is all this interconnected. Things that take into consideration our conscious, our subconscious, our hardwiring, our primal mind. It takes into consideration our motivations, our goals, our intentions. It takes into consideration how much we have in morality or concentration or wisdom. It takes into all the considerations of all kinds. So each individual in Buddhism is like a fingerprint. Well, they do it. That's not you. That's not me. So we have to know our minds and our motivations and our intentions, and then we can say, okay, this has to be tailor-made for me. So someone can enjoy something freely, whereas somebody else who has an attachment cannot enjoy the same thing. It would be not to their benefit. Somebody has a glass of wine with their dinner, and an alcoholic can't touch it. Totally different. Have a glass of wine with dinner, fine. What's wrong with that? So that person will enjoy it and leave it. There's no problem. But an alcoholic can't go anywhere near it. Even a sip of it is dangerous to an alcoholic. Very different. So attachment is the same. What if it were a particular attachment? See, what we do is we idealize and say all attachments are bad, but the Buddha didn't say that. And so we have to think, what attachment do I have that increases my delusion, my greed, hatred, or delusion? And that attachment is not a skillful attachment. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Pretty much. It still just seems to me that stymies a lot of things if you're trying to practice that.
What?
Right.
Give me an example.
Maybe I didn't understand it as to the way that you presented it.
I mean, I can't think of an example. Whatever you do and you have an attachment.
Like, if you're going to be the first one in the exam because that's going to allow you...
But that's not an attachment. That's not a... That's not my idea. No, that's not my definition of an attachment.
Yeah, see, I think
a goal that you're really striving for is not an attachment. That's an intention. That's a goal, intended goal, but that's not attachment.
And then what's an attachment?
Attachment is something that you need in your life. This is the Buddhist.
And you're trying to practice non-attachment, right?
Not necessarily. No, you're non-attachment to things that shouldn't be attached to. In other words, an alcoholic should have non-attachment to alcohol. But someone, as I said, someone who is not, they can have a glass of wine, that's fine.
Yeah, maybe I just misplaced this category of non-attachment.
I think you're thinking about an intentional, a goal or intention of some kind that you have a goal to you're going towards.
Right. And I think when I was reading it, I said, gosh, everything could be non-attachment.
Everything could be attachment, too.
Everything could be attachment, so then I'm not practicing non-attachment at all.
Well, you see,
Buddhism kind of practice.
It's fairly easy if you don't think about it. You're overthinking it, so you're paralyzed. Mm-hmm. I have this attachment, okay, so what? Big deal. We don't have sin in Buddhism, it's not like somebody's going to zap you. You know, it's a wide open plane. You want to be attached to something? Be attached. You can still be Buddhist. You can't kill in Buddhism, right? Okay, are there fishermen in Thailand?
Yeah.
Do they kill fish?
Yeah.
So what? Oh, there's nobody going to zap you or send you to hell or mark you on the list. This is why I'm saying the concept of Buddhism is so different. So there are Buddhists in the world who are policemen, there are Buddhist soldiers, there are Buddhist executioners, there are Buddhist slaughterhouse people, there are Buddhist doctors, Buddhist experimental scientists who work on animals. They're still Buddhists. We don't say, ooh, you know, sinful. What is their intention? That's the bottom line in Buddhism. Two things to really remember so that you can just forget about the attachment part. Is this to my benefit and the benefit of others? That's one thing you have to think about. And that is kind of like the basis of how when you're going to think, say, or do something, then that question should come up. Is this to my benefit and the benefit of others? And if we're going to say something because we're angry, or we're jealous, or we're fearful, it's never to our benefit and the benefit of anybody else in that state. But we can still say something to somebody out of compassion, even though it's a negative. Do you know what I'm saying? What is our intention? What is it? Because karma, the idea of karma is intention. That's all that means. Karma means intention, intention means karma. So when we think, act, and do intending, we make karma, skillful or unskillful. Not sin or not sin. There's no sin in Buddhism. So, the Buddha understood perfectly well that people went about fishing and hunting and all these other things. He understood that. He understood about armies. It's hard to understand because he did not interfere in social structures. He merely told individuals how they can be happier and take it or leave it. So if someone's unhappy, you're doing something wrong. If you're not happy, you're doing something wrong. And if they didn't, he didn't say, well, you're going to hell, or you're going to... It's just, okay. And you see that he did not reform India, social reformation of India. He wasn't interested in reforming India. The social structure that was there, he left it alone. And he just tried to make people's minds reform things on their own. So he didn't tell them how to do it. He told them how to become wise But he didn't say what would happen when you did become wise. So if you followed Buddhism, then you would not kill. If you followed what the Buddha said, you wouldn't kill humans or animals. There would have never been any kind of slavery. There would have people would be honest, straightforward, kind to each other, compassionate, etc., etc., etc. And the population of the earth might not be so great, so huge. So unlike other religions that say it's a sin, even when it's something quite secular, like having children, or defense of a country, or saying this group of people is bad and you can go to war with them or you can enslave them. He didn't get into that kind of thing at all. And when he spoke to individuals, and he spoke to that individual. So luckily, he talked for 45 years, and he spoke to very intelligent people and very common, normal people, and to very, very wealthy and to very, very poor. He spoke to them all. But there isn't this strident evangelical kind of message. It is simply you're happy or unhappy by your own mind. And how you view, if someone is here, you can't sort of, beam them over somewhere else where they're not. They have to start, wherever we are, we start from that position. So, like everybody here, right? How much you know about Buddhism, that's where you are right now. And I can blah, blah, blah and give you the doctrine, you're not going to understand it yet. You're not going to understand it. So people will slowly move in a direction by using, by investigating, by using, by their own practice. And that practice, the most important part of that practice is you watch your own mind. You have to watch what it's doing all the time. And we call that mindfulness. You've heard that word, right? Mindfulness means watch what your mind is doing in the present. Is it taking care of the problem, or is it creating a ink in the water like a squid? So oftentimes, I remember that one of my teachers was asked, well, where do I begin? Greed, hatred, and delusion, which thing should I work on first? And the teacher says, whatever pops up into your mind is what you work on. Don't go looking for trouble. So here, we're all sitting here. And then, an hour from now, who knows what we'll be doing, but your mind never stops working. Never, ever stops. It's scheming and planning and dividing and chopping up and counting, and it's always doing something. All you have to do is be careful, watch the mind, say, what is my motivation? You can't really trust your own minds. You can't. Because they'll do things that cause us pain and other people pain. And we do it all the time. Why they say that? Why they do that? What was I thinking? Those are the very common phrases. And we don't question our motivations or intentions, and this is the problem with the world. People don't question their motivations and intentions. And if we're thinking, you can always catch yourself in a greater way. You can catch yourself, the state of my mind, am I happy? What I'm thinking right now is that, am I happy? Is it pleasing? If it's not, then well, wait a minute, what's going on then? What am I wasting my time for? being mindful of your own mind is part of, is the path, that's Buddhism. Just watching what your own mind is intending and what it's wanting to do and what it's thinking, saying, and doing. Because there's first thought, then there's speech, and then there's action by body. And that's, your mind is doing that. So it's as if we blame the elephant. In fact, it's the little guy sitting on top of the elephant driving it to do this and that, that it's a fault. And the mind, it has that intentional will, that willed aspect of it. And that is what makes us happy or unhappy. That's what makes us, if you look at it in a longer Buddhist point of view, there is the here and now, then there's the the immediate past of our, of this lifetime. And whatever state we happen to be in is the sum total of all of our decisions and intentions that we've had up to this point. Who our friends are, what we eat, what music we like, boyfriends, girlfriends, how we dress, what car we drive, what job we have, that's our fault. That's where we've got ourselves to. What we will be, what you are going to be in your future, is what the decisions you're making now. That's where you're going. So if you remember that, it becomes more important. Do I want to be happy? Do I want to be wise? Where am I going? All the decisions we make now will be what we are going to be. If you look at a longer term, it's lifetime after lifetime after lifetime of basically of not being very wise. And you can see where some people end up. Everybody knows other people, but they say, "Oh, why do they? You know, look how they live." I always think of people like manic depressive people, and because I know a few, and we've known people even here who lived in their car, in the back seat. It's just full of junk. Everything, you know, eat, throw it in the back seat. And they're depressed, and then they become manic, and they're really happy, and they're running around. And every decision they make is terrible. I'll take my gas money from my car, and I'll just buy some booze. I want to have fun. No thought of the consequences of things. No job, no... Well, I'll buy two big dogs that eat like polar bears. No money. Then I'll get my daughter a pet rat. And the rat chews all the drawers and chews all the lines, electricity lines in the house. You can see it like a train wreck coming, right? But the person who's doing this has no idea. That's an extreme example to make us think about our own lives and where we are and where we're going. The same thing. It's the same thing. What we decide, what our intentions are, what our decisions are, that's where we're going. That's where we're going. And we don't look. If we're not paying attention, we're going to end up happy, unhappy, happy, unhappy. Life will be just like this because it's kind of like no plans. But if you're skillful, meaning if you watch your mind, look, when somebody's angry, fine, be angry. You know, do what you want. Be really angry. Simply do not make a decision when you're angry. Don't talk and don't do anything. Even that much, without getting rid of anger, even that much, think what that would do. Road rage or drunk rage or family rages or fight, what think of it would do if somebody says, "Oops, I'm angry, I'm not going to talk and I'm not going to act until my anger's gone." Think how that would make the world so much better. And that goes for greed, hatred, delusion, anger, fear, anxieties. And when the mind is in that state, and you're mindful, you catch it. And you say, no, I am not in control when that happens. Free will, out the window. Free will is a lot of mythology about free will. So when someone is in the grip of anger, they're not free. They're not free. The decisions they make are not free. So, this is what meditation is about. Meditation is teaching the mind to sit still, calm down, you know, level out, be nice and neutral and tranquil. Something that we have to train the mind to do because it's not normally going to do it. So when meditation gets good, concentration gets good, then people begin to find a place that is very pleasant as opposed to the everyday mind that is not in control. So any one word we hear, like attachment, any one word we hear that is not in the context, it's like a tapestry. Buddhism is like a tapestry, a woven tapestry. If you take a few threads out and look at them, it's not going to make any sense. It's not a picture. Or a puzzle. If you take a few pieces of the puzzle and you say, what is this? So that's why I said at the beginning, Buddhism, it takes time to understand a little more, and they begin to fit together. And you say, the Buddha has an overall view of the world. He has an overall view of body and mind that matches reality and works. But it's something that you have to you really start with the basics. And to start, you have to be you have to have a want to understand about reality and truth in our lives, in our bodies and minds. Because basically what the Buddha is talking about is our body and our mind. He wasn't interested in the universe. He was interested in the origin of unhappiness and the origin of happiness, and that's here. And that has a view of body which is deluded, and also a view of itself which is deluded, and does not match reality, and that's the problem. That's why there's so much unhappiness. So one could say the goal of Buddhism is to be wise, but the byproduct is happiness. And that's all everybody wants to be. I mean, dog and cat here, they just want to be happy. They're not interested in sitting in meditation or, you know, becoming enlightened. So the vast majority of beings in the universe, they just want to be happy. And the basis for humans is also, I want to be happy. It's just that if you don't know how to be happy, then of course it's running around in circles, hit and miss. And if someone thinks very rich people are happy, you're very mistaken. Or power brings happiness, or fame brings happiness. No. It's obviously not true. Because people are not happy. And it's like the world associates happiness so much with material stuff. You know, if I were rich, if I were famous, I would do this or this. No. I think one of the things I saw a while back was if you talk about governments and heads of states all over the world, and there's one that everybody was like confused. The country of Bhutan, which is a Buddhist country in the Himalayan mountains, and it has a king of Bhutan. And they were talking about his country's goals, and he said, well, we have one goal. My goal, our product, the product of Bhutan, is happiness. I just want my people to be happy. It wasn't power, it wasn't becoming a trade center, it wasn't collecting millions of dollars. No, I just want my people to be happy. Well, that was it. I think he said at the UN too, people were very confused. What the hell are they talking about? I want to be happy. That's a stupid goal. So attachment, I would not be attached to that idea of attachment. Just throw it out. So all Buddhism is, if you, let's say, like everybody else in the world, we don't have time for religion. Catholics, Jews, Muslims, people really don't do religion in their daily lives. Let's trot it out on Sunday and we think about it a little bit. But people just earn a living. We earn a living, we interact in social interactions, we do those things. And that's why Buddhism is so great, because it's all part of that. It's not idealism, but it's part of how do we behave during the day? How do we behave every minute of the day? So you take it and you say, okay, what I intend is it to my benefit and the benefit of others? That's easy. Just try that. You'll find out it's really hard. And then if you have an emotional, if you get angry or you get any kind of negative emotion that is not to your benefit, the benefit of others, try to scrush it. Try to get it right there and say, I'm not going to think, act, or say when I'm in this state of mind. Try that. And then observe other people not doing that and how much trouble we get into. How many feelings are hurt. How many useless verbiage that we, you know, arrows aimed at others. the world says and does a lot of things that cause other people unhappiness. And they're often over things that are not important, simply not important. So basic Buddhism is just that. Being mindful is a hard one. Go to, do you have the site Access to Insight? A website.
Sure.
Access to Insight. It's one word, .org. And it has a virtual library. And you can go by subject. You can look up anything you want. You can look up karma or rebirth or dependent origination or attachment. And that's a great website. Straight to the point. No frills.
Insight.org.
Access to Insight.
Access to Insight.
And it's all one word. They all run together. .org. Mankun ko fran horum rin pasa rum rin sasana put my ngong มันไม่ใช่มันไม่ชัด
ความคิดสนใจเขาไปคุยกับพระที่ชิคาโกได้ก็อ่านเองนี้เขาก็มีคำถามในใจนี่สองปีที่แล้วไปเมืองไทยแล้วก็ไปวัดที่นู่นเลยนี่ท่านพระท่านก็ไม่เก่งภาษาก็เลยอธิบายเขาเราเองก็ไม่รู้จักคือก็เลยแต่เขาอยากมาวัดอะค่ะก็เลย
คำพูดการอธิบายคือมันเป็นคำเทคนิคของศาสนาเฉพาะเวลาพูดคำเดียวแปลเป็นคำเดียวภาษาอังกฤษแต่มันจะไม่ถูกต้องเพราะความคิดไม่เหมือนกันเมื่อคนคิดแบบชาติแบบพูดในพุทธศาสนาในคิดไม่เหมือนคนแบบคริสต์หรือยูศาสนายูว่าของครึ่งเมืองที่นี่มันตั้งแต่เกิดมันก็ไม่เป็นอย่างนั้นคิดอีกอย่างต้องช้าๆไปนะไม่ใช่เปลี่ยนเป็นพุทธทีเดียวนะไม่ได้ช้าไปเรื่อยๆค่อยๆเข้าใจใหม่ The Buddha says, you know, something called Dhamma Vijaya, investigation of phenomena. It's very important in Buddhism, as to investigate things, like attachment. So that's absolutely correct. What you're doing is, I need to know what this means. I don't get it. I can't. And that's the correct thing to do in Buddhism. But when you get to When something blocks you and you quite don't understand it, you can always shelve it. So, we have people that well, I like this part about Buddhism, but I know about this. I'm not sure I agree with that. I said, just leave it alone. Leave it alone. What you like and agree with, try it. Try it. Use it. And see how it works. And that's how you build conviction. Well, the Buddha said this, and I did it. Well, it works just like he said it did. And then the mind is willing to, okay, well, I'll take this on, I'll try this out and see if it works. But sometimes we puzzle over things that the Buddha said, well, put it aside, do something else. Yeah, attachment is... You pick the doozy. Because attachment is, there are good attachments. And and finally, what I'd like to say is that the Buddha's talking about his teaching is like a raft. So a man wants to cross this body of water, and he builds a raft and paddles across. And he gets to the other side, what do you do with the raft? Put it under your arm, put it on your head, carry it around with you. You just leave it. So he says, even my teaching, even Buddhism, my teaching, you dump when you're finished. Don't carry it around. So some people, an intellectual wants to reach, study all the, everything about Buddhism and go over in the Titanic. A cruise, giant mammoth cruise ship with, spas and and somebody else just gets on a log and paddles across. They both get across. So there's Buddhism can be very simple and straightforward, and we can still cross. Or it can be extremely complicated, difficult, and mammoth, and they both work. So depending on everything, then there's all the people in between. I think I'm a log myself sometimes, or a gear too. Okay, now we take a half hour break, and then there's meditation at 7 o'clock. No, Kuntur Mungur then. Give me a bad man.